Hello there, you awakening wonders. Thanks for watching Stay Free with Russell Brand. Wherever you're watching it, YouTube, wherever, you can only see the whole show on Rumble. Click the red button to join if you're watching on a laptop. If you're watching on your phone, there's a little green line there that helps you to watch it on locals. That's where I watch the comments. Watching from Ohio, don't drink the water, Danny S. Don't drink the water. Not till you've heard everything that we've got to tell you. If you're watching on YouTube, you can probably just see COVID misinformation coming up along the... Probably there's a way of clicking over just under that. We've got a great show for you today. We're talking about Biden in Ukraine. Where should the president of the United States be right now? You can tell us in the chat. Should it be in Ukraine? Should it be in Ohio? We've got a great guest on the show coming from the Lever. She's talking about the hypocrisy of Biden's handling of the Ohio train wreck and the way that he's lined himself up with corporations rather than ordinary Americans, precisely at the chance when there's an opportunity to show how much you care about the environment. We all say we care about the environment. Look how easy it is. I care about the environment. How about this? Stand up for ordinary people when there's an environmental disaster that's going to be costly at corporate interest. Where are you now? Where's the care for the environment now? I'm in Ukraine. Why are you in Ukraine for the humanitarian crisis? Or is there going to be some, what's that, profits in the future? BlackRock, who's your president? Who's he the president of? The American people or American globalist corporations? These are some of the questions we'll be asking. We've got another fantastic guest coming up as well in the show. Two guests. Gareth, we've got so many guests. There's hardly time for me to have an on-screen assistant producer as part of the show. Dan Cohen's coming on. He's going to be talking to us about the NIH's search for the new Fauci. Please, God, me get the job. Please, God, me get the job. I've been a lobbyist for Big Pharma. I've worked hard at Pfizer. I'm a friend with Albert Baller, and by God, do I wish I was a little bit taller. It's likely, though, that it's going to be a man called Dr. Peter Hotez, who's made a lot of nice WHO propaganda comparing people that don't like taking certain medicines, remember we're still on YouTube, to actual terrorists. But what are they these days? So, once we click over onto Rumble, we'll be talking to you about some new research around the estimates of COVID deaths. We can't tell you too much, but you know what you thought anyway. It's that. Albert Baller, though, he'll surely tell us the truth sooner or later. Remember this tweet from Albert Baller. Transparency is important. We all know that. So I'd like to provide greater clarity around the timelines for Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine and the three key areas where we must demonstrate success in order to submit for emergency use authorization or approval. Okay, so it's transparency that interests Albert Baller. So
he prefers that to profit.
You give Albert Baller a simple choice. What do you want, mate? A big pile of money for the shareholders? Or is it that principle of transparency? Albert Baller, same every time. Transparency, transparency, transparency. That's why when his emails have been released, the Israel court has ordered the Ministry of Health to release the agreement with Pfizer. Here's the transparency, guys. Look at that. That is not that transparent.
No, and this is the liability and indemnity provision. So this is pretty important to know.
I wonder what kind of indemnity provision Pfizer were granted. Listen, I can tell you everything about that. Were we given indemnity? What so if there were any consequences, we wouldn't be. And I'm
on
not
YouTube.
Saying there are. Not saying there are any consequences. There are no only good ones.
Mm.
Good consequences.
I don't think you can even say good ones.
There are no consequences. Nothing. It was neutral. Can you say that?
Not sure.
It's difficult to know with the WHO. Can you just tell me all of the things you did around indemnity? Sure. Here you go. I've got nothing to hide. There you go. It's just that. That's the answer to it. Also, we'll be talking to you a little bit more about... Victoria Nuland, if you don't know her, you should, because she's been working for successive American administrations. She was around when it was Bush W and Cheney in the White House. She says that the US supports Ukrainian attacks on Crimea. Now, that, for us, presents a little bit of a problem. It's what I call the circle of death. Let me talk you through the circle of death right now. Joe Biden, you all remember him saying, the idea we're going to send in offensive equipment to Ukraine, that's called World War III. Now, Putin, as you know, said Russia could resort to nuclear weapons if Ukraine tries to retake Crimea. Zelensky says, we have always kept the goal in mind to seize Donbass and liberate Crimea. Now, Victoria Nulander says, we are supporting Ukraine hitting Russia's military in Crimea. That is what I call the circle of death. But instead of like little Simba getting held up, it's just, I think, us holding up a little baby what's all ashes now. I don't know what it would be like.
No.
I'm not
maybe one of those little dogs with, You know, the robot dogs.
Hold up a robot dog. Get back in your house. this is...
I like that you basically collaborated with Elton John there.
Not for the first time, my friend, in ways that I'm not prepared to share with you. Jens Stoltenberg has admitted that the war between Ukraine and Russia began in 2014. Now, this, again...
Where's he from?
Jens Stoltenberg?
Yeah. Is it
Sweden?
Is it Finland? InfoWars or something like that.
Yeah, no, he must be one of Alex Jones's mates over there at InfoWars, I think. Oh, no, it's NATO. He's from NATO. So remember when we were told, like, oh, don't be, you're a conspiracy theorist, you're unpatriotic, you don't care about Ukrainian people losing their energy, losing their lives, being used as pawns in a globalist scheme. We do bloody well care. Well, this conspiracy theorist over at NATO admits that the war did begin in 2014. Have a look at this.
The war didn't start in February last year. The war started in 2014. And since 2014, NATO allies have provided support to Ukraine.
It's just very interesting to hear that, because that's what we've been talking about. I just had a conversation with Chris Hedges, who's going to be on the show tomorrow, where he talks about how the American military industrial complex requires an economy of ongoing war. We've seen it in Afghanistan. Previously, we've seen it in Vietnam and Korea. Of course, we saw it in Iraq. And he was telling me, mate, that ultimately what we are witnessing is a kind of the decline of empire and a frantic attempt to retain a degree of control. By doing stuff that I said to Chris Hedges, seems counterintuitive, like engaging some of the most powerful superpowers in the world in potentially military nuclear conflicts.
Yeah, unless they're just all so much more clever than we are.
I wonder that, like, sometimes when I'm watching football, I think, don't take him off, sit deeper. Why are you not using the whip? And I think, I don't know anything about this, so probably they know more. And of course, when it comes to geopolitics, you sometimes wonder, don't you, if the things that you intuit, like accepting that Russia has been a country for ages and ages, and you can't just get rid of it, you can't just make Russia disappear, it's an actual country. As, you know, intuitively, that feels true. Or don't agitate China, don't continually campaign for a unipolar world, except that there are other nations, other incentives, don't try to create endless division, don't put profit ahead of human life. I mean, all of these things seem like plain old common sense to me, but we've got much more informed guests than me coming on the show, and stay with us for that. And remember, if you watch us on YouTube, in a minute we'll be clicking over exclusively to Rumble, where we can tell you some startling facts about deaths during COVID, and, you know, it's basically what you think it is. But it never hurts to hear that stuff confirmed, does it?
Certainly not. No. How long are we away from doing that? Okay.
We're going to be doing it in a moment. Before that, let's have a look at Donald Trump talking about the conditions in Ukraine and how we could handle things differently. Donald Trump, of course, predictably thinks that he could solve this conflict in a couple of hours. And sometimes when I see how confident he is, I wonder if he could. Let's have a look.
And that's what they're doing now. They're knocking out all the power plants and people are freezing to death.
That's surely not a good thing to freeze to death, is it?
And it's a very bad thing. Like, people are dying. The country is being obliterated.
Obliterated, you say?
Obliterated.
There he goes, old Donald Trump. He has a
He didn't do that last bit, did he?
What, that little dinging noise?
I don't think that was Trump.
I don't know if Donald Trump has somehow combined his consciousness and very being with some AI masterpiece.
Who knows? AI Trump.
AI Trump. Who could stop him? Only perhaps Ron the Sanctimonious, Meatball Ron. A lot of different nicknames. I like it when he said, I don't spend any time thinking about nicknames for Ron DeSantis. I'm busy. Yeah. Got a lot of stuff on my plate. Stay free with Russell Brand. See it first on Rumble. Rogue Nation said acid rain coming soon. This is on our locals chat that you can join. Makawaikwi says Aaron Brockovich should have gotten there by now. Joe's dog says bet the bugs died first. This could be a cascading event of ecological death. Thank you for joining us on Locals. If you want to join us on Locals, you can click through and become a member of the community. Alarmed, I think, by the situation, even my dog Bear has risen to his feet, and we are blessed now to be joined by Julia Rock, investigative journalist at The Lever, talking about this scenario. Thanks for joining us, Julia. We're so grateful to have you here.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on.
The thing that we're most surprised by among the numerous interlocking cataclysms that we're currently describing is that Biden's Department of Justice are backing Norfolk Southern's bid to block lawsuits. I feel that's a story that you were instrumental in disseminating. Can you tell us a little bit more about that, please, Julia?
Yeah, so this is a story about a Supreme Court case, a U.S. Supreme Court case that had oral arguments last fall. And it basically has to do with sort of a series of technical issues about jurisdiction. But the case involves a former Norfolk Southern employee who moved to sue the company under a federal law that protects railroad workers injured on the job. And he sued in the state of Pennsylvania, which is not the state where he had been working. And Norfolk Southern is trying to block the lawsuit. Unusually, last fall, the Biden administration got involved in the case. They filed a Friends of the Court brief. They argued on the side of Norfolk Southern during oral arguments. And it was sort of unusual that they took the side of Norfolk Southern in this case that could help corporations prevent civil lawsuits. So this all played out before the recent disaster in East Palestine. But it sort of shows that the Biden administration was already taking the side of the railroad against people who had been poisoned by chemicals on the job.
What worries me, Julia, is how environmentalism is showcased as a defining issue and a divisive one at that in some political circles. But when the opportunity comes to act on behalf of the environment in a situation where it's evidently needed, it feels to me that the response to this has been largely botched, not to mention the case that you just outlined, where there was an opportunity to support a railroad worker, and indeed the hypocrisy of Biden campaigning aggressively that he would be a pro-worker president, that he would be in support of unions, all promises that have come to naught, and the fact that railroad workers have been unable to get the necessary pay rises or sick days that they were promised, and the fact that all of that equipment weren't updated. And I heard somewhere, Julia, is it true that they've got some like Civil War equipment on those trains? I didn't even know they had trains then. I'm confused about the whole chronology of this thing. So what do you feel, broadly speaking, about the hypocrisy around environmentalism and opportunities to support working people that this story represents?
Yeah, so you're exactly right that it's interesting how the railroad industry, more so than maybe any other industry except perhaps the fossil fuel industry, has really highlighted sort of the Biden administration's position sort of between workers' rights and protecting the environment on the one hand, and then sort of backing corporations, the administration's corporate donors on the other. And there have been a lot of situations in which, you know, when pitted between the two, the Biden administration has chosen the side of the corporation. So as you mentioned, you know, there was the administration urging Congress to step in and block a rail strike, which basically took away all the power that rail unions had to negotiate a better contract. There's the Biden administration intervening on the side of Norfolk Southern in this Supreme Court case. And now it has taken a really long time for the administration to sort of say anything critical of Norfolk Southern after this recent train derailment in Ohio.
Also, they've been cutting expenditure, I feel, for a long while, cutting back their workforce, not investing in the railroads. And it's difficult not to make a connection between that kind of cost cutting driven by the pursuit of profit and now these consequences for the people of Ohio. We heard recently that not only is the Ohio River dangerously polluted, which I think provides 10% of America with its water supply, but that 80% of American rivers are currently polluted. Is that true, mate? I mean, we do a lot of research. We're a big organization. Just feel free to comment on the things that you're confident commenting in upon, rather, like the pollution of the Ohio River and its significance as a supplier to American people. That's important to us, and we'll do some more research on the 80% of American rivers which have been polluted, because we've done a story on it already this week. But sometimes I'm just pulling these things out there, assuming that everyone shares my mind, and thankfully people don't.
Well, I hadn't seen the 80% statistic, but it doesn't come as any surprise to me. But you're right that the Ohio River provides a huge amount of drinking water to people. It's a massive watershed, and residents in East Palestine and in other places have been ordered to drink bottled water because the toxic chemical that was released during the derailment, vinyl chloride, sort of dissipates from the air somewhat quickly, but it lingers for a really long time in the water and in the soil. And so there are a lot of concerns about contamination. And there was just a story this morning, you know, about how the EPA has ordered Norfolk Southern to be in charge of the cleanup in the area, and they are going to monitor the cleanup. And that's sort of a massive step forward. It's one of the most aggressive moves the administration has taken against Norfolk Southern since this derailment. But there are a lot of concerns about contamination.
I don't think Norfolk Southern should be in charge of it. I didn't like that bit where the solution was to blow it up and to send it up into the sky in black plumes. That seems to be like what a child would do. That's how I used to keep my bedroom tidy, throwing things out the window, setting them on fire. It doesn't seem like an appropriate response to it.
Yeah, I mean, it's completely wild that, you know, if a train, as you had mentioned before, the railroad industry has slashed its workforce by nearly 30% in the past decade. They've lobbied against safety regulations. They're carrying hazardous materials on trains with antiquated technologies. And then, of course, a derailment happens. And what do? They blow the stuff into the air. It leaks into the water. It leaks into the soil. It doesn't seem fair or reasonable at all.
Julia, I feel like I read in your article that the complete list of chemicals on board that train hasn't yet been released. And my assumption is that that's not because they're such lovely chemicals that we'll all get excited and start drinking Ohio water and sucking the soil over there. It's presumably because they are dangerous contaminants.
Yeah. So initially, when the train first derailed, first responders didn't even know what hazardous chemicals were on board the train because the train was not being regulated as a high hazard flammable train, despite, of course, the fact that it started on fire when it derailed and the tanks were later, the chemicals were released and burned off. So there was not good information about what chemicals were on board. Slowly, as federal agencies have begun their investigations, a more complete list of the chemicals has been published. And I believe now all of the chemicals that were on board sort of have been made public. But initially, there was not a lot of information about what was on the train, which made it very, you know, hard, of course, for first responders to know how to conduct a safe response.
Thanks very much for clearing that up. Joe, am I right in saying that Joe Biden hasn't visited Ohio yet, but is currently in Ukraine? Do you think that that is a visit driven by humanitarian care or by the potential economic ties that this war might yield, economic opportunities that it might grant, and the ongoing profits gleaned by the military-industrial complex as the aid given to Ukraine takes the form of products made by Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, BAE Systems and Northrop Grumman? And how do you feel about that?
Well, you gave a great answer in your question, which I appreciate. But yeah, you're right. He hasn't been to East Palestine, which is pretty striking, you know, just given the amount of public attention it's gotten, the amount of sort of conspiracy floating around the incident, the amount of environmental contamination, sort of the fact that he has not been a great watchdog of the railroad industry, sort of to say the least. So, you know, obviously there are geopolitical reasons as well as, you know, the profits of the military industrial complex for Biden to go to Ukraine. But it's pretty striking that he didn't go to East Palestine.
The Lever is widely regarded as a sort of left of center organization. We have David Sirota on our show, and we really admire the work that you do there and that others working at the Lever do. Do you feel that this is a time where alliances beyond the usual political consensus have to be formed, given that centralized establishment power seems indefatigable and is, in a way, seems incapable of responding to the evident need for change, whether it's, you know, it's just some of the issues that this case and story brings up, i.e. meaningful environmentalism, representation of the rights of workers, end to corporate lobbying. What do you think about that aspect of this, Julia?
I mean, absolutely. You know, in the fall, the rail unions and rail workers got a lot of news coverage and attention for issues that have been going on for years, which was, again, sort of the slashing of the workforces, their really draconian attendance policies, their lack of paid sick leave, understaffing on trains. And those workers, you know, had been warning about a derailment like this. And I think there's sort of a way in which people really seeing the consequences, not just for workers, but also for themselves, the health and safety consequences, the environmental consequences of corporations sort of decimating their workforces, will hopefully give broader public support to some of the demands that the rail workers were making, which included safety concerns. And, you know, at the Lever, we you report critically on anybody who has the power to change things or should be held accountable when disasters like this happen. We've gotten a lot of flack for reporting critically on the Biden administration because people like to point out, you know, that Trump rolled back a lot of train safety regulations, which is completely true. It's also true that Biden is the president now and that he has sort of a vast administrative apparatus at his disposal to regulate industries like the railroads. And so I think it's pretty unreasonable to sort of claim that there's nothing he can do.
Julia Rock, you're getting a lot of love on our chat over on Locals that you can join now by clicking the button. Not you, Julie. You've got a lot of work to do at the lever. Mac Wackwee says, Norfolk Southern is already running trains over the same tracks and double stacking cars to make up for losses. Elsewhere on the chat, a lot of people seem to be obsessed with llamas and alpacas, which I don't think is helping the conversation move forward at all, unless I'm missing something. Julia, thank you so much for joining us for this conversation. You can follow Julia and her work at levernews.com. Julia, thanks for coming on the show. It's lovely to talk to you and I hope we get to see you again soon.
This is great. Thanks for having me.
Take care. Bye. Bye, Julia. Thanks very much. Thanks for joining us. Now, you will be astonished to learn that the NIH need a new leader. I know what you're thinking. Fauci, can't he stay forever? He did such a great job of advising us during the pandemic in an unbiased way.
You've done a narrative shift, haven't you?
I do shift narratives.
Yeah, wow.
I shift narratives. What do you want me to do?
Immediate shift. Very nice. Yeah.
I shift narratives.
A 180.
What do you want to do? Talk about Julia the lever and llamas and alpacas down on the chat.
I thought you might want to.
Well, I'm actually interested. I don't know how they've gotten onto the subject, to tell you the truth. But I think it's going to have more impact on the lives of ordinary people if we work out who's going to be the next person running the NIH. I also think it's important that when we have Dan Cohen joining us for from Redacted, that we have an idea of what we're discussing. Now, maybe we can talk about alpacas and llamas and glory in the conversation with Julia Rock from The Lever and her revelations about a corrupt railway industry and a lack of real care for environmentalism and in Joe Biden, a potentially corrupt president visiting Ukraine because of economic interests rather than Ukrainian people's need for support and aid and ignoring the plight of the people of East Palestine. But Gareth,
no, you're absolutely right.
I'm under a lot of pressure.
I can tell. Yeah,
a lot of pressure.
I think
workplace.
That was a nice link. Yeah, one thing you can say: we're literally talking about the kind of corruption and the ways in which Biden has done nothing to tackle the railroad industry. I mean, came to power saying we're going to give workers all these sick days, didn't happen because of lobbyists, because the railroad industry is basically too powerful for him. He's completely impotent, only in that regard.
I imagine in other regards as well.
Potentially so. You'd think so, maybe.
I don't want to disparage Joe Biden's reproductive capacity particularly,
sure.
But I imagine at the age of, what is he now, 109, that to maintain
I thought it was a relationship with the pharmaceutical industry.
Primal Colin 2 says, unvaccinated equals Nazi is next. Oh, Primal Colin 2.
So cynical.
Don't be so cynical. The world's a beautiful place. Go fly a kite. Not if there's a lockdown in a 15-minute city.
Better a kite than a balloon, anyway. At least
don't
it might
fly
survive.
Fly balloon, they scare people. People don't like to see a balloon. They've gone radically out of fashion. Joining us now is Dan Cohen, a correspondent for Redacted, who is fascinated by the NIH's search for the new Fauci, a man called Dr. Peter Hotez, who we have just seen. So thanks very much for joining us, mate. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks a lot for having me, Russell. Appreciate it.
That's a hell of a backdrop you've got there. I'm coming to terms with it even now.
It's just a bunch of letters all thrown together. I mean, it's technically it says Uncaptured Media, which is my outlet that I do in addition to Redacted, but it's kind of a work in progress, I guess.
No, I like it. I think that you should be proud of it. Now, tell us a little bit more about Peter Hotez and what's going on with that dude. We watched that bit of propaganda that he made for the WHO a while ago, and I frankly took a bit of a dislike to him. I imagine you're coming on here to tell us that he's the best thing since sliced bread. It's going to be a radical change from Fauci. And finally, we've got the voice of the people within the NIH. My fingers are crossed now. They're crossing.
Well, fortunately, we're on Rumble. We're not on YouTube, so we don't have to say those kinds of things. We can speak freely. I mean, Peter Hotez, he really personifies the biosecurity regime that we've all been subjected to for the last 3 years in terms of completely unscientific reasoning for lockdowns, for vaccine mandates, for coercion that has destroyed so many lives. And he is now he's rumored, it's sort of speculative, that he's going to be Dr. Fauci's replacement as head of the NIH, basically the most powerful doctor in the world. And so I did a two-part investigative series for Redacted, basically looking at his history from the beginning of his career in the mid-1980s up until essentially the present day. And what I found is just truly shocking in terms of not only his willingness to lie and deceive the public, but his medical experiments that he has conducted on unsuspecting populations in Latin America, in Africa, in South Asia. And he's just a dangerous character.
Dan, can I stop you right there? Dan, can I stop you right there? What about these medical experiments that he's conducted on people in Latin America? I mean, that sounds like sci-fi. That sounds dystopian. That sounds like Mengele. Now, what are these experiments that he carried out?
Well, so in the 1980s, he began treating what he coined this term, neglected tropical diseases. It's sort of like, you know, the responsibility to protect or something like that, that military doctrine. He coined this term as a marketing thing, basically for the Rockefeller Foundation. And he got money from the Gates Foundation, the Clinton Global Initiative, and spawned a neglected tropical disease industrial complex where all of these maladies in countries that have been exploited by Europe and the United States, where there's no infrastructure and people are living in literal sewage and they get sick. Well, he says, instead of cleaning that up and building infrastructure, what we'll do is test drugs on people, and none of them ever succeed. And that's his whole thing. So, and there's been all kinds of horrible, horrible results. Now that's a $10 billion industry. All of the big pharma companies, Pfizer is into it, the Gates Foundation, the U.S. government through USAID has put $10 billion into it. And it's just enormous. Samantha Power tweets about it. So that is basically the doing of Peter Hotez.
That seems like an extraordinary practice
profits.
In itself.
A lot of profits in that. Yeah.
It's a profitable endeavor.
Yeah.
Forgotten tropical diseases. Bring them up, bring them back like flared trousers, flare-ups, though. Oh, no, that's a terrible story. Also, Dan, it seems to be a trend to promote the idea, like sort of new narratives that offer opportunities for censorship and smearing. Of course, unvaccinated people took a lot of hits during the pandemic, and increasingly it seems that there was very little legitimacy to that kind of judgment, whether it's the figures emerging around death, the new heart attack information, the adverse event stuff, the efficacy of vaccines. The list just goes on and on. And yet we're entering an era where we're told that misinformation is worse than terrorism. In fact, that's one of Peter Hotez's,
catchphrases?
Catchphrases, maxims. Yeah, let's stick with catchphrases. So what do you reckon about that, Dan?
Well, Peter Hotez wants censorship. He wants to criminalize anyone who sort of dissents from the biomedical regime that he subscribes to and that he's a mouthpiece for. So he has called for, in the United States, the Department of Homeland Security, the State Department, the Pentagon, all of the departments of government to come together, but not only government departments in the United States, but also across the world, the United Nations, NATO, all of them to come together to censor anyone who has questions about this. So if you're a parent who says, well, maybe I want to get some more information about this injection that they want to put in my four-year-old's arm, you are now considered someone who should be censored. You're even considered a terrorist. And so he admits that he works with the U.S. government in order to carry out this censorship regime. And I mean, we've seen the incredible amounts of censorship all over social media. That's why we're talking about this on Rumble and not on YouTube.
I suppose the ability to disseminate and share information and the ability to connect that these new technologies have granted us presents a major problem and a necessary dynamic shift for centralized authority. They need to control this ability to present cohesive counter-narratives. One of the things that's been astonishing for us is that throughout the pandemic, we've been given information mostly by our audience, by people watching this right now. They've been very diligent in sending us stories, collating and curating various facts as the narrative evolved, watching out for experts that were willing to speak out, people that were actually pro-vaccine but wanted to discuss the particularities of mRNA vaccines and the nature of vaccinating huge populations without what they described as due diligence. And I feel that we are seeing now that even a short period of time after it was impossible to talk about something, let's just take one example, like natural immunity, the mainstream media are necessarily discussing it because they know that there is a challenge to be met, that people are aware. And I think like that it's interesting that we're already talking about Peter Hotez. It means that he's unlikely to have a halcyon period where he's regarded as a credible or a doctor or to be lionized as an irreproachable medical professional, because all of this stuff will be available for a lot of people immediately. I think we're at the point, aren't we, Dan, where it's not even about condemning individuals, but looking at such entrenched systemic corruption that without meaningful change to those systems, we're not going to get meaningful change in our lives. And when you talk about organizations like NATO, the WHO, WEF, World Bank, you know, all of these unelected, extremely influential bodies that either offer loans in exchange for regime change or have the ability to pass laws, are causing a great deal of fear. And what you really need in order to ensure that their evident agenda isn't interrupted is the ability to cause division at the domestic level, confusion. You need to invent terms like misinformation and disinformation. Dan, has your research thrown up similar findings?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, I don't even mean to fixate on Peter Hotez. It's just that he is the figure that's been promoted and pushed forward. And he's been on CNN and MSNBC almost daily for the last 3 years, pushing the sort of mainstream, the establishment's COVID agenda. But obviously he is a mouthpiece for a much larger power. And as the narrative has fallen apart, they've become more desperate. And that's why they want to censor anybody, you know, who dissents from the regime. And it's, I mean, it's coming, the narrative has really fallen apart. It's been absurd from the beginning, but for those of us who didn't question from the start, it's become totally obvious that we've been lied to. I mean, if you look at just Peter Hotez's statements, I don't, without any kind of analysis or color, you can just see that he lied again and again and again. First, he said that the emergency use authorization was dangerous for the mRNA shots. And then he said, it's perfectly fine. And then he said, two shots are enough. And then three shots, four shots, five shots. So he completely changed what he was saying, depending on the kind of political situation. What Dr. Pierre Corey told me is that he's not a medical figure. He is a political figure completely. And that's exactly what we have been subjected to. It's not medical. It's completely bogus. It is purely political.
That's a fascinating observation, that science and medicine have become subsets of corporatist ideals. We saw in the pandemic how politicized this conversation became, to the point where truth was obfuscated to the point of invisibility. What do you think, Gareth?
Yeah, so interesting, Dan. I mean, I just wondered, like, in terms of Peter Hotez and his involvement in some of the earlier decisions in the pandemic. So obviously we're hearing a lot about how ineffective and potentially damaging, actually, lockdowns were, for one. And I wondered, in light of, you know, some of the information that we're discovering now, what was his involvement, or what was the kind of narrative that he was involved with at the time around lockdowns, and how kind of stringent was he on that?
Well, he pushed lockdowns extremely hard. Basically, part of that was, of course, to implode the economy for the benefit of the ultra wealthy. We saw that Silicon Valley had the greatest period of growth. It was the largest upward transfer of wealth in human history, but it was also a way to scare people and to sort of terrorize them into wanting the fix to get out of this lockdown regime. And so it was all about fear mongering. And so Peter Hotez was on TV saying that, you know, if you're anywhere near someone who might have COVID, who is outside, then you might get infected. I mean, we all experience, when you walk by someone, everyone puts the mask on immediately, and there's just this general fear of your neighbors, and it really turns people against each other. And I think that was the point, to prevent people from talking to each other, to prevent any kind of exchange of ideas, God forbid, political organization. And it was all, you know, just watch MSNBC and Rachel Maddow and Peter Hotez. And you know, that was the idea behind, I think, a lot of what happened with COVID.
Dan, is it true that Peter Hotez wrote an article conflating hesitancy around vaccine with racism and, in particular, anti-Semitism? Is that true? Because we did a story recently about how the word freedom is currently being branded a far-right term. And here on this channel, we are about absolute inclusivity, absolute diversity, absolute democracy, the ability to express yourself as an individual, whether you have a traditional orthodox background or a progressive background and ideology. We believe in individual and collective freedom and decentralization where possible. These attempts to conflate various ideas seems like an interesting new maneuver. So I wonder what you thought about Hotez's claims and how a if they were.
Yeah, well, I completely share that ideology, that perspective of inclusivity and freedom. And Peter Hotez wants to use, you know, in this case, he used Judaism as a human shield for the COVID agenda. He has teamed up with the Anti-Defamation League, which is an Israel lobby outfit, in order to conflate criticism of the COVID measures with anti-Semitism. So anybody who has questions about these mRNA experimental injections is an anti-Semite, is what he said. And so he's done appearances with the Anti-Defamation League, which actually awarded Pfizer CEO Albert Bourla its like a courage award. And he actually also authored a recent paper saying that he's a victim of anti-Semitism, and he put out four emails in this paper that he has received. Three of them don't say anything about being Jewish. You know, I mean, I'm Jewish. I've had some anti-Semitic comments in my life. That's about the most mild possible. And so that's his entire evidence for this whole kind of phenomenon of anti-vax is anti-Semitism. And like I said, it's just using the Israel lobby's approach, where the Israel lobby always says anybody who criticizes Israel's treatment of Palestinians or supports Palestinian rights is an anti-Semite. And so Pfizer and the Anti-Defamation League saw, oh, well, we'll just apply that to the same kind of model to the COVID agenda. And anyone who disagrees is an anti-Semite.
That's a great answer, Dan. My hope is that spaces like this grant us an opportunity to come together and find new alliances and unions to move beyond individual hatred, bigotry and prejudice to fight the very necessary war against centralized power and global corporatism that doesn't really care about ideology and religion, just power, dominion and profit. Dan, thank you so much for your excellent contributions to our conversation and for your brilliant work and describing the nature of Peter Hotez and the kind of threat that this globalism and propagandist model presents to normal people across the world everywhere. I really appreciate you taking your time. And I will reiterate, I love your backdrop.
Thanks very much for having me. I look forward to doing it again, Russell. Thank you.
Definitely have you back, Dan. You're fantastic. Dan Cohen's a correspondent on Redacted, and he just told you about his own deal there, Uncaptured. That's available on Substack, and it looks like he has some video content as well. Should we revel in it for a while, Gal? You don't want me ploughing forwards. I know you like to spend a little bit of time. This is like the post-coital chat, bit of pillow talk right now to your mate.
Where's your cigarette?
All right, darling, was that okay for you? Well, impressed? Are you impressed with how I've done the interview?
It's very good.
Never seen moves like that, have you?
Absolutely.
Never been on the end of that sort of interviewing?
No chance.
Covered a lot of ground.
That was lovely.
It's nice, wasn't it?
Nice is probably the wrong word. It's absolutely terrifying.
Terrifying. Terrifying and nice. A little while ago, we were talking about Project Veritas, because I think we all enjoyed that sting operation on a Pfizer employee, a honey trap method, where after three or four dates, they sprung it on this dude that, you know, that they'd been getting him to say stuff about Pfizer, and they talked about that. What would they say? Something that sounds a bit like
directed evolution.
Directed evolution. Mm. That's the kind of thing. But that sounds to me like God. That's how I think of that's my religious beliefs described right there. But we learned a lot more about James O'Keefe subsequently, because it was kind of a smear campaign against him, and he did some stuff that sounded pretty off key, like I don't know, he ate a pregnant lady's sandwich. He took his whole team to see Oklahoma, and maybe there was some legit serious stuff. But when we spoke about it on this show, we were saying, is what he has done as important as what Pfizer and the generally speaking, what the pandemic response has been, the profits that have been gleaned, the suffering that has been inflicted.
The redacted emails,
man. Like, you know, ideologically, I'm sure there's a lot of clear blue water between us and Project Veritas. I understand they're kind of libertarian and it looks like they've got some funding from some traditional right-wing organizations, stuff that involves the Koch brothers and all that kind of gear. But I believe, as I keep saying, this is a time of alliance and looking at new ways to come together, not ways to be divided. We must find new unity. We must be willing to listen to people who we disagree with. That's certainly our approach. You should see some of the shows I'm going on when I'm in America, Gal.
Also, he was great in Oklahoma, wasn't he?
What people forget when discussing James O'Keefe that he did the best bloody lead role in Oklahoma that I've seen for a very long time. And his resignation speech, very rewardingly and touchingly, does reference his appearance in Oklahoma. Would you like to have a little look at something like Gareth? Would you guys like to have a look? Join us. Remember, we're on Locals right now. We read the Oklahoma, that's character zero. He wrote the sandwich into it. Nice. Very funny, you lot. Okay, let's have a look. He looks great as a cowboy, says Pride Fultz. And Sensitive Heart 25, giving us a lot of love. Seems to like you more than me, Gareth. I'm not sure if I like the way that dynamic's developing. Let's have a look at James O'Keefe's resignation speech.
There was also some truly bizarre grievances, including an allegation that I stole a pregnant woman's sandwich in federal court. These included, and you can't make this...
In court.
It's funny, because that will have to get read in court.
He stole a pregnant lady's sandwich. He picked up a dog by its back legs and pushed it around like a vacuum cleaner. That was in fourth grade. It's all on the list. That's a Simpsons joke for you guys there.
Up, that Project Veritas paid for James O'Keefe's down payment of his wedding. I got a chuckle out of this. I'm not married.
That's weird. They've made that up then.
Yeah.
So they've sort of come for him. I guess the reason we were interested in this story, because we thought, is it because he's exposed Pfizer to some embarrassment?
Sure.
That like someone's gone. We did find, in one of our episodes, we found a connection, didn't we, between Pfizer and the Koch brothers. That some of the funding, there was some organization that funds Project Veritas that Pfizer donate money to. You should watch all of our episodes because we talk about stuff like this. After you've watched this episode, stay on Rumble, watch some more of the stuff.
There was a financial link there that could be made, but it does seem oddly coincidental that this is happening after that massive sting operation that the mainstream media wouldn't touch either.
Why didn't the mainstream media report on that? I don't know, man. In a way, I suppose it's good because it means we get an opportunity to create this movement where we initially start by doing news reporting, but ultimately move into political space.
Also, I think he probably didn't... if it's true, and it's alleged that he did steal that sandwich, that didn't happen like the other day, did it? It's not like he did that sting and he was like, brilliant, I'm so happy with that sting, and now for your sandwich.
Or on the way in, I'll take that. Now here, my man, what's this you're saying about Pfizer profiteering? This is delicious. Stop crying over there. It's my hormones. It's my sandwich.
I've never been married. I do hope to get married one day. In fact, I got married to you in Oklahoma. But that was pretend. Everyone enjoyed it. We rented a charter bus. We all went down. Everyone enjoyed that musical. Or at least I thought.
Oh, it's like he's upset at the end. That's I also really like that he's obviously got some of the cast of Oklahoma here at his resignation speech.
They're still there. I wonder if they wanted him to stay and maybe have a go at Annie Get Your Gun or Rent or another Grease. Yeah, I feel kind of bad for the guy. I don't know, man. I didn't hear the full story. I didn't have time to hear the full story. You may not know this, but by God, it's Shrove Tuesday, Pancake Day, Mardi Gras on the streets of Rio de Janeiro. Here in Britain, we eat little thin fatty snacks. Do you want to see two of the world's most powerful people chowing down on a fish pancake? Of course you do. That's why you come here for. We've told you about Ohio. We've told you about Ukraine. We've brought you fantastic guests that will expose the infrastructure behind real power. We've brought you together from across the political spectrum and told you explicitly that without individual spiritual awakening, we cannot change the world. The one thing we've not yet done is showed you Putin and Xi Jinping eating making and then eating pancakes together in a sort of an item that I think goes on too long for either of their comfort and ends up with them sort of pushing fish eggs in a pancake.
Yeah, I also wonder if Putin's a bit annoyed that he's not very good at it.
He's like, I think he's burned it.
Do you reckon?
And he's at least some of his pancake has spilled into another territory there.
Yes, Putin. It has.
I'd say that the centre bit, that's old Soviet Union, Russia, but then it's definitely straight into Ukraine.
Well, neither of them are doing the old flip technique.
Like, hop, liar!
Yeah.
That's hard, though. Have you done that?
I've done that, yeah.
Yeah, my kids are obsessed with pancakes. Mm. They bung themselves up on them. They get up early, they go downstairs, they make them on their own. I worry about it.
Yeah, you should.
Walking, it's not my responsibility. Oh, no, it is my responsibility. What I feel is, like, because they're not, like, Western leaders, I'm used to their propagandist nonsense where they're trying to pretend to be normal. Look, you're just like us. And I know they are normal and just like us, and that's why them having such absurd amounts of power and privilege is so ludicrous. But, like, seeing them people, like, they're frightening people.
Yeah.
Like, they have people killed, legit. I mean, I know Donald Trump would say, well, you think we don't? Who's naive now? You know, I mean, of course.
Think we're so innocent.
Yeah, I don't think we're innocent. But, like, it's just odd to see him doing something so sort of mundane and time-consuming.
Yeah, and exactly. It's how, who sold this to them as a thing to do?
It's still going on. It goes on for a long time. Why is Putin commentating over there? Like, he's looking at the other guy's one. There's a bloody great hole in that pancake.
I know.
He's as bad
as not with that. How nervous would you be if you were those chefs next to him?
I don't know if I'd intervene.
No.
Or not.
I'd just say, oh, it's brilliant, that.
I think, like, if Joe Biden was doing it, if Zelensky was there, Joe Biden would be behind the scenes making the pancake.
Like in Ghost.
Oh, my love, my darling. It has become a rot size. I mean, did you see that cuddle with Zelensky's floundering pan and scrambling about? I think all other leaders are a rot size in Zelensky because of his jumpers. Now, I know that Ukrainian people need a good leader. Ukrainian people need representation. And I love that a comedian has risen to the top in the way that Zelensky has. And I think this war should be stopped. But I don't agree with is the likes of Rishi Sunak, our Prime Minister, and Justin Trudeau, the most beautiful-haired libertarian liberalist leader in the world, like, are all, like, sort of pouring over him and crushing on him and fanboying.
They really are.
Vladimir! They love him, don't they?
They do love him. They've got a little club out of it, those two.
Yeah, Rishi Sunak shouldn't be in charge of a country. No. You can see the way, like, I say that, like, Putin, like, this is not, like, ideological, because I disagree with the level of tyranny, power and control that these men have, right? I believe in decentralisation.
Mm,
yeah. But at least they're old school.
Decentralisation wouldn't go down too well with these guys.
No, guys, we just want to, like, why don't you let every province be a sort of an independent anarcho-syndicalist group and they democratically... Night, Sonny Jim. Yeah, it'll be game. Over pretty Christmas. They just eat their fish pancakes while I flounder on the floor. Hey, listen, we've got to wrap this up. We can't spend all day talking about Xi Jinping and Putin making pancakes. Doesn't seem right, does it?
Doesn't.
Seems like an odd thing. There's a war on. Hey, we've got a great show for you tomorrow. Darren Allen, author of 33 Myths About the System, an anarchist, an actual anarchist who's got ideas. He's coming on to talk to us about artificial world conditions and how we've been ultimately conditioned into a state of numb conformity and how to reawaken ourselves. All sorts of unquestioned myths that define our perspective on reality. He's a fantastic writer. I think you're going to really enjoy him. On Thursday, I'm talking to Pulitzer Prize winning journalist Chris Hedges. On Friday, we've got Jeremy Corbell coming on talking about UFOs, spy balloons, the deep state. If you are a member of Locals, you can watch some of these conversations happening live, because some of those things are recorded early in the day, and you can join us in our chat and ask us questions. Wherever you are in the US of states right now, you've got to consider, is it worth making the trip to LA to see me live March the 2nd at the Vermont, because I'm going on Bill Maher over there. Then on March the 6th, I'm going to the Bilheimer Capital Theatre because I'm appearing on Tucker Carlson. And between those things, I'll be on Joe Rogan again. But if you want to see me live, you can join me at either of those places. For tickets, go to russellbrand.com. Join us on Locals so you can be with the chat. We do a weekly meditation where you can tell me whatever it is you're feeling will help you. Heartbreak, grief, loneliness, dealing with corruption
pancakes.
And oppression.
Pancakes.
Pancakes. You need a meditation about pancakes? I'll whip one up for you and we'll flip it over together. We will be... and also my new stand-up special. Mm. That's going to be available on Locals exclusively for at least a month or so. Okay, join us tomorrow. Not for more of the same, because that would be... I mean, that would be very tedious.
We wouldn't do that.
We're moving forward fast. But for more of the different. Until then, stay free.
Many switch in, switch on, switch off. Many switch in, switch on, switch off.